Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Okay, well, while I have you talking, did you kind of get what I was going to there? Is like, how does that threshold happen in your head where you're absolutely scientifically savvy? You're, like you said, I'm the daughter of a physics professor. And, you know, and yet these stories, these mythic presentations, these liturgical things are, you know, they don't match up there. And yet somehow you're able to say sacred story, different than the scientific story, but yet somehow I can enter into this new realm that this stuff is inspiring and energizing and empowering for me.
Yeah, I think... Sorry, I hope you can't hear my obnoxious dog in the background. I've been trying to shut up, but it's not working. I think that Mormonism is in some ways better equipped than lots of religions to escape those sorts of dichotomies. You know, this idea that science, you know, that scientific and religious explanations are somehow antithetical to each other. You know, I just grew up with the sense that, you know, part of our job as Mormons was to learn from the best books, and that must surely include scientific textbooks, and to, you know, try to understand the ways that God works. You know, not only to acknowledge his hand in all things, but to try to figure out, you know, how his hand works, what, you know, what it is that makes that happen, and that, you know, the best scientific explanation we have might be the best approximate understanding of God that we could come to. And that, you know, that where there were difficulties in reconciling those two explanations, that it was probably just a sign that, you know, I or, you know, other people just hadn't understood one side or the other of the equation well enough, either, you know, what God intended or how the science was working, how the physical laws were operating. I don't really get the sense that truths from various magisteria, to use the academic word, need to be in conflict with each other. You know, certainly sometimes they are, and sometimes you run into things where you just have to, you know, you just have to pick one, and that might mean that, you know, you start to feel a little less special because you believe in evolution instead of God having, you know, made Adam pristine and perfect right away, or, you know, whatever. There definitely are trade-offs and difficult reconciliations to make, but there's such joy in the process of doing that reconciliation, such delight in sort of stretching our minds and hearts to encompass all that vastness that, I don't know. It just all seems like part of the process of being a religious person to me.
Beautifully put.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, I love that. It is. There's something that you just sort of live into. And like you said, this is what it means to be a religious person. It's part of the process. And I'm guessing that it didn't happen overnight. I know that I had intense periods of, can I be religious at all, as I was learning other things, and even just learning the theoretical stuff in anthropology and sociology and you know, psychology and all those different things where I'm wondering about it. But I just kind of lived into it as part of this this thing, because there are so many feelings and there's this sense of empowerment that comes over me sometimes, that there's just, it's beyond the realm of the light that a science or they can only show me so much, and they can't touch this other stuff. And so I just loved how you did it. If you don't mind, I'm going to go to Jared next. And Jared, Would you kind of come across to me? I mean, you're very spiritual, and like you say, all the way that these different things work on us in religion, and you're always very affirming of it in here. But I've got to say that you are I don't know if you're the most overt in the way you talk about the demythologization process that you've gone through, and so you're seeing scripture, you know, laid bare through all the different layers and how it's constructed, and yet you've still maintained a wonderful positivity to it. So here's what I want to do for you, and again, Christine, I didn't quite add this in for you, so tell me if you want to. Jared, Easter, resurrection, Christ, knowing all that you do, what works on your heart? How do you know? Give us a glimpse of Jared Anderson at Easter time, with all these different pieces of you. That how do they come together in a positive way for you?
Wow. See, you just I was just really happy that with Christine it was so general. no, I will answer that, and it really, you know, you really strike me to the core, because that's very difficult for me, of course. I do want to frame things a little bit more broadly and then go to Easter.
Okay, please.
Because I'm acutely sensitive to the trade-offs that we experience. And one moment that I really appreciated for my Mormon Stories interview was when one of the commentators said, or maybe it was in one of the Mormon Matters comments, actually, where someone said, "I finally understand what you meant when you said that you don't value this kind of like analytic post-literal belief more than literal belief," because they're just trade-offs. You know, they mm-hmm. have different vulnerabilities. They have different strengths. And one thing that is poignant in my own heart and soul is I feel like I have components of all the pieces. Like, I am both a skeptic and a mystic. I am both aesthetic and, you know, like rigorous inquiry. I don't think those are necessarily, you know, opposites. And so whereas I have had these intensely spiritual personal experiences in the past, in my more literal worldview, I don't have those the same way anymore. And I'm wondering, you know, this is something that Maxine Hanks and I talk about. I'm wondering if they'll come back, and I just don't know. And this is something that I try to be open about it, you know, and just I'm in the process, and maybe they will come back, and I hope they do. But that said, here are some things that do remain, you know, because I definitely, as you alluded, I definitely feel like I have had my worldview deconstructed down to the foundations. You know, it's right. Not just selective.
Yeah, and you're very vocal about it. Yeah. Like, that's what I was trying to say, is you're just so, you talk about it way more freely than I do. And I admire that.
Thanks. Even though it is intensely contextual, you know, I try. So, for example, I would never mention it on my Sunday School podcast, which is a whole topic on it on its own.
Point.
So a couple things that I'm working on right now is I'm really, really, like, I work very hard spiritually. I try to think things through. I try to serve. So just that service-oriented pragmatism of, like, I want to help people. I want to serve people independently of what, and this is a side issue to what you're asking, independently of what's true and what we can know, I want to be good. I want to do good. And that's fulfilling for me. That said, I am very much plugged into aesthetics. So the things we talked about, I love music. I love ritual. I love drama. I love all of these components that just engage our humanity. So I think that these can have meaning and power beyond the literal meaning. Do you see what I mean? Whatever the specifics are. So when I'm at church or when I'm at a service, even though I don't have the same beliefs about Jesus that I used to, it is still moving to me. It is still powerful to me. And I still like sacrament very much. And I think that's a great example, you know, of something, me still engaging ritually, even though I've deconstructed it. I cherish the time to reflect over my week and renew my promise to be a better person. So what does Easter mean to me? I mean, first, Jesus of Nazareth is one of my heroes. Like, I really, really love Jesus. And I think that Jesus, as a reformer, his teachings were absolutely amazing. And so I'm deeply moved by his example. I also think, And Dan, you know how sensitive I am, that I never want to break others down. I never unproductively, you know, I'm so tentative about sharing my own perspective because I would never want my own sharing to compromise someone else's. So I can only tell my own story, and I would emphasize that this is just me and what I, you know, how I approach it. I do have a harder time, you know, and it is a couple steps removed because I love the sense of renewal. I love the sense of rebirth. I think that the symbolism of rebirth is very, very important. Hold on. I'd like to share something that I wrote for Katrina. Like, it's really personal, but it's about resurrection. This is part of a poem that I wrote, and I hope that it can express the way that I approach immortality and resurrection. And so here are a couple things. First, I take a very utilitarian approach where I say, as much as we feel certain about whether we'll live again after this life, because a lot of people will say, I'm absolutely sure that I'm going to live after this life, that I'll see my loved ones who have passed before me. You know, that feels very certain. And I respect that, but we are more sure we are living now. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
However sure we are that we live after this life, we know we live now. So one of my favorite sayings that I've quoted before is from the book Good Without God. And it says, humanists believe in life before death. So I love the symbolism of resurrection. And I do hope to live after this life. You know, I do. And I would love that. But I'm just very realistic that we can't know that. And so I'm very much about just kind of that daily miracle of rebirth that we have. And the ritual of rebirth and the ritual of new beginnings are all very, very important to me. At the same time, I don't think it's productive to invest in the afterlife. Do you know what I mean? Like, not overly much. I think that our investments need to pay off in the here and now, you know, and not just be like, I'm giving everything for the afterlife. And that's one of the flaws of religion, I think. The other part that I find meaningful is there is a sense of immortality that I feel. And this is one thing that I wrote to my wife. I want to raise children and travel and lecture and become whole, full, and actualized together. Ripples of influence spreading distances unknown. I want to be old and quiet with you, yet never cease to be captivated by our conversation. In this life where we fail to fully know even ourselves, I want to learn you. I want to love you a lifetime, live with you, die by you. I want us to exist in the afterlife of each other's memories until we join each other once again, living on in posterity, influence, and love we have imprinted on the world. I want to remain by you as our molecules return to mother to continue to travel the wheel and nourish the trees together forever.
Beautiful.
And that's really personal, but that is me facing the possibility of this existence being all there is, and yet finding the beauty in it, and finding the poetry in it, and finding the immortality of it. I hope that answered your question in part. I feel like it's kind of inadequate.
Okay, but as you're singing the big salvific part of Easter, and you know you're hearing those sermons, how does your brain process that? Are you just able to say, I appreciate the beauty, the aesthetics of this? These stories nourished me, got me. They taught me how to have spiritual experiences to where I could feel my way to this peace that I've found. What's happening in your head?
Yeah, it's not so sure as that. I really do try to live within the narrative whenever I can.
Okay.
So for example, when I comment on Bible passages or when I comment on the Book of Mormon passages, and I experienced this quite a few times last year when going over the Book of Mormon, I very much feel the power of the narrative, you know, and I have to admit, I mean, you know that Jesus is not my strongest point, ironically, you know, as a New Testament scholar. I'm much stronger with like God and general spirituality than Christianity per se. And so we really are, like, I'm exposing my vulnerabilities and my limitation in this podcast, you know, because spiritually it's mm-hmm. it's not my language. It's not my area of strength. Where like, I, even, even when I was a full believer, I never connected with Jesus as much as I did with God.
Yeah.
So I love music. Like, with music related to Easter, I can still feel the power of the music. I still love, I mean, not that it's Easter, but like, you know, Jesus once of humble birth. And I still love, I try to live in the narrative. But this is one area where I kind of have to learn from others and feel the strength of others, because it's not my thing.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
And feel free to speak. Feel free to speak up as we go on, Christine. Because I didn't ask you for that Easter layer, do you want to share anything now, or just pass on that?
Yeah, everybody's heard enough of me. It's fine.
Well, you've spoken by far the least on this podcast. But all of it's been dynamite, pure gold from Christine.
Yeah.
No, thank you for the aesthetic and this just the poetry of your soul always just comes out so strong. So thank you.
Sure.
Zina, you've kind of given us hints around the edges, and you clearly are somebody that immerses herself easily within this world of mythic and dramas and all that stuff. And yet, you know, you're a hardcore empiricist as well. So how do you do it, or what would you share?
I don't necessarily try to keep separate boxes for them. I think that in some ways they come together when I'm teaching. I don't try to be all mystical as I'm, you know, writing academic things or vice versa, but I haven't had the same kind of shift that sounds like that Jared's gone through. And I never had quite the background that Christine did in having physics professor father, but I had kind of a mystic father. So it's kind of, you know, an interesting mix. But one of the ways I like to phrase it in terms of, you know, empirical, knowable, claimable truth, reproducible results, if you want, and versus religion, because religion is so subjective, is that the texts of each endeavor are not necessarily commensurate. They're not mutually, they're not asking or answering the same questions. So if science is asking and answering how, then philosophy and religion and art are asking and trying to answer why.
Right.
And those don't have to be the same. They can't be the same answer in some cases. In some cases, they come really close to being the same answer, frustratingly close. But you can't say the rainbow exists because God wanted it to. You can also, without also saying, you're not denying that by saying the rainbow exists because as the water falls through the air, the sun hits it and it's diffracted in these colors. And so if God wanted the water to diffract that way, great, he did it, it works. And if he wanted to say to the people that were writing that story, or the people that were writing that story wanted to say, I'm going to make this about God, then I don't think it undercuts the truth claim of the other discipline.
Good.
To say that. And so what frustrates me is when people a scientific bent dismiss religion as, well, you might as well believe in the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus. That there's a certain immaturity to that, but it's not that bad. I mean, there's nothing wrong with children believing that way, and there's nothing wrong with adults believing the other. So why are you, you know, attacking religious people for that kind of, and most scientists don't do that. The sort of popular atheism that's getting more and more bold now is a little more obnoxious about that sometimes, but for the most part, no. And then there's the flip side, where deeply religious people will dismiss scientists as being, you know, just deluded or betrayed by the ways of men and blah blah blah. And
mm-hmm.
No, if you can empirically prove something, it's empirically provable, and that's asking and answering how. And even if you say, well, because God wanted it, you haven't answered how. Okay, God wanted that, and therefore it exists, but how did he do it? And as Christine said, it's just to find out the answer to that question, if you do it as a believer, it just adds to the greatness of God. And the sort of mystery with a capital M that we don't necessarily like, Protestants and hardcore imperialists that try to make it about, you know, choose one or the other. You know, some more fundamentalist Protestants try to make it choose one or the other and it has to be religion. And some sort of less informed scientists might say choose one or the other and it can't be religion. It has to be science. Are both missing out on a kind of richness of human experience that isn't available to either one without the other, I think.
Right.
And so I think there's an awful lot to be said about just learning to live with a few loose ends, you know, learning to accept that, hey, there's a gap in our knowledge there that we haven't filled in yet. And that's okay. You know, I'm still going to be able to sleep at night. I don't know that I can ever intellectualize or language some of the more mystical or spiritual experiences that I've had, but I don't know that I necessarily need to. And likewise, I don't know that I will ever have a way of completely escaping and ignoring and saying, well, now that I know that I just have wacky brain chemistry, I can dismiss, you know, my religious beliefs. I, you know, my dad used to say, if you ever come to a question or come to an answer to a question that tries to stop all the other questions, you aren't thinking hard enough. Because any question that puts a stop to other questions is just cheating. It's just a bully. It's not actually giving you any knowledge if it says, here's the answer, so shut up. Then all it's doing is stopping things. And anything that's stopped is damned in both spellings of the word. It's stopped and it's also condemned. And it's condemned itself by stopping its curiosity, stopping its potential for progress. And so I think any kind of curiosity that remains has got to be, if not a good thing unto itself, it leads to good things. And if not something that is, that looks attractive, it's something that can be made attractive or is a step on the way, or just, you know, we just haven't finished yet. So, and that's one of the wonderful things about how mind-blowing eternity is that we haven't finished yet. And there probably won't be a time when we can say, okay, we're done. You know, perfection, just even the word sounds like it means the place at which you don't have to try anymore because it's the state that we've arrived at. And I think what, if I'm not mistaken, Joseph Smith was saying is that perfection is a state of ongoing perfection. You're not perfect if you're stopped. If you're stopped, then you're imperfect. And so you got to start again. And then perfection is sort of that. If, you know, and it's counter to the way we use language, but it's as close as I can get sometimes.
Beautiful, beautiful. And so when you're singing Easter hymns, when you're at a sunrise service, when language that, because the problem is religious, it errs both ways. We sometimes have scientists that will venture into the why realm, and we also have a lot of religion that will venture into the how, you know, realm.
Yep.
And those get mixed in a lot at, you know, at these high ritual occasions and things like that. Was it just a matter of time? I'll confess with me, sometimes I can totally immerse, and other times I pull myself out of it just because of my rational lenses and, you know, that part of my brain, brain takes off too. But is it just a living in process like you were talking about with some of this other stuff? You're just a quiet making peace with going to sleep at night without answers?
Yeah, for the most part it is. The things that I get most frustrated with are not those philosophical questions or difficulties in sort of thinking through my own, you know, what is it that I'm going to accept? What is it that is true if this is true and this other thing is true and they seem to contradict each other? That doesn't bother me. The thing that bothers me is truth claims made by people that shut down the conversation.
Okay, exactly.
Again,
yeah.
The truth claims that say, well, if you take the sacrament with your left hand, you're just going to hell and that's the end of it. You know, that's the most ridiculous example I could think of, but it's when I see it's, I guess, my own difficulty is with people missing the points that I don't want them to miss. You know, I'm doing the same thing myself here and being hypocritical, saying that the stuff that bothers me is human behavior about other people's human behavior about people's human behavior. So I'm stuck in the same loop that I'm condemning, and that's what's frustrating.
Yeah. Thank you.
Could I add one thing, Dan?
Please.
Because again, I'm feeling very exposed with the questions you asked. But the way that I approach these religious questions is I really do try not to close any doors. And I try to explore things and explain things and also experience things in a way that allows as much, you know, that I maintain as much openness to the universe as possible. I haven't found the perfect word for this attitude or outlook towards learning and experiencing. There's this word possibilian, which defines it, but it's a dumb word, like flexitarian, so I won't use it. But it's this idea of, you know, I think you've read my essay, Jesus, Symbol or Savior, you know, that lays out as clearly as possible my relationship with Jesus and the atonement and so forth. And so, like, if I die and Jesus is there, you know, I would give him a big hug. You know, I wouldn't, and I would love that. And I would, you know, I'd try to be open to these things while also moving forward with my life, you know, in a way that I think is most productive and most reasonable. But I want to create productive and constructive ways of looking at religious concepts, even the ones I don't believe in. Whereas with me myself, yes, there is one sense of me mourning perhaps certain types of spiritual experiences that I may not have again, like hearing the voice of God. Maybe I will, and I'm open to that. But I really just try to take a pragmatic, thoughtful openness. You know, where I appreciate things aesthetically, even if I don't believe them. You know, I try not to let the intellectual side of me mess up my enjoyment of these other mystical or aesthetic experiences.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for the sake of honesty, you know, I do acknowledge that this exact topic is one of my weakest points as far as religiously, which made me tentative to even being on this episode, but I hope it was, you know, constructive for everyone and they enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, Drew.
Really, very, very powerful. Thank you for saying that and being so open and vulnerable with us. And Jared, you and I are pretty close. When you said you're both a mystic and a skeptic, I mean, that is exactly, I think, that nails me down as well. There's this. I was driven when I got into my master's thesis to write about ritual and to study about myth and ritual because of the temple. You know, even though I had mastered this language and it's this strange play and this presentation and it's this high stylization and all the different things that, you know, as I studied about ritual, I learned that it works on, you know, it bypasses certain pathways in the brain and, you know, cognitive filters and stuff like that and how drama and things work on that. The fundamental thing was I would walk out of a temple with that renewed orientation within the universe, this renewed energy to face life. You know, at the strangest times, these literally weird language pieces from the endowment would pop into my life and really cut to the core of some choice that was in front of me. And so this thing about ritual and whatnot has for, you know, 30 years now, there was this piece of me that said the aesthetic is not to be dismissed because it had these practical and good effects in my life. And so if you guys don't mind, there's a piece of this resurrection and Easter stuff that no one's at least mentioned here in their final things that it occurred to me to just do it. So I'm winging this off the top of my head. One of the theories about religion that I find, Zina, you kind of maybe helped a little bit when you're saying some of this is lazy, you know, this lazy thinking or something like that. And, you know, I like Ricky Gervais as a comic. You know, I loved his movie Ghost Town is one of my favorites and things like that. But, you know, there was this one that he basically wrote and was part of. It's called The Invention of Lying. Did anybody see that film?
Oh, I've heard about it.
I talk about it all the time in my class. Yeah.
Okay, well then help me about this. So basically, one of the theories out there is that religion purely exists because of this fear of death, and so this whole world that he's invented in the future, no one's ever even imagined the concept of lying. But when this character is faced with his mother dying, just to offer her some comfort, he starts to make up things, and he's surprising himself as he's making up these comforting things. But because the entire society has never had lies told to them at all. They've never even had the concept of saying anything to somebody else that just wasn't, completely frank about, things. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, people start to believe it. And there's this sort of sense that all religion is purely a matter of trying to overcome death. And it kind of presents this weakness of human beings that we need the fairy tale to be comforted and stuff like that. And I guess where I'm going to take him on is, yeah, I think that's a piece of it, that, that religion works on that. But there's that entire, those kinds of theories and those that want to explain away religion at that level completely miss that religion is basically also involved with those who've had these, peak experiences. P-E-A-K as in highest, or P-E-E-K. Yeah. There's two ways that you can, both words of it, of this transcendent openness, bottom falling out, united with everything kind of stuff, that this is the sort of stuff that kind of comes in through the edges of ritual and things like that. And so when I, there's, to me, religion almost... Bill Hansen was on, we did one called Short Takes a little while ago, and he used, I think, David Stendhal Rost, who kind of says what religion is doing, it's trying to preserve, this sense of these peak experiences, these mind-blowing, cosmic, joining kind of experiences. And so part of ritual to me is almost like the theory follows the experience. And so I always say, let's ground ourselves in the experience and trust the experience, and then any of the theories, any of the words that come, any of the framings or whatnot, those are, there's always those kinds of things attached to the experience, but there is this ability to somewhat separate and say, energies of the universe, God, spirit, whatever you want to say, they're here. And then the rest of it is kind of more fair game for me without me still saying I didn't have that experience, without explaining away, the fact that my life and my perspective of who I am and, of other people as I've, seen the light shine forth from them, without trying to say that didn't happen. That was all chemistry or something like that. So I guess what I want to say to Ricky Gervais is religion has these things as well, too. And so what's happened for me is I'm sitting there now singing, death is conquered, man is free, Christ has won the victory. And I may be like you, Jared. Jesus to me hasn't, I'm not an exclusive guy. He's not the one and only, way to have a transformative experience. But he was mine. These scriptures, these stories, these rituals, they're the ones that taught me to pray. They're the ones that taught me that I was loved enough to sort of actually hear the answer when the energies kind of came through. So whether Christ has won the victory and it was only him that could do it, and you get this whole language that it needed to be a God who's died and he would have the ability to overcome death for all, when those things quit working for me, but my heck, Christ is, death is conquered for me.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it other than, like Jared is saying, he would have these experiences with his wife, and he would love for, and he'd love to have Christ afterwards and all that stuff, but his life is sweeter and whatnot here. And so I kind of get a sense of death is conquered for him. I know that it has for me. Again, I'm with the crowd that's a little bit more, I don't want to say certain, but I'm quite animated by the evidences and just my own sense of expansiveness to think that I don't end at death. But on the other hand, I can sing those hymns most of the time. Like I was confessing there a little bit when Zina was finishing up, there's these moments where I kind of fall out of the flow, or I fall out of ritual mode and get into my brain mode and all that stuff. But that I guess is the peak at my Easter processing is, yeah, I don't know how death is conquered, but it was for me, and it was through Christ. And these are stories, these are symbols, these are things that I happily speak about and inhabit when I can. And yet sometimes I'll come on a podcast like this and I'll deconstruct them a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my peek there, folks. Who's got anything else? Anything left to share?
I would highly recommend it for people who are kind of a little more of the irreverent, but still kind of aghast that they have come to be a believer. I would recommend the writings of Anne Lamott, who's she's a Christian writer. She's a novelist and stuff too, but she just she's very down to earth, and she's very encouraging. She's really open to both sides of the experience. She loves Jesus herself, but she doesn't expect anybody else to love Jesus. You know, she's like perfectly fine with that, with whatever place you are on the scale. And she's a Christian writer, but she doesn't sort of push anything on people. She's a lot of fun. So good. That's not very, you know, climactic, but you can put back in the book or something.
No, that's good. And we'll just invite the listeners to also share, you know, writers or whatnot that have helped them in this tension. Because I think in many ways, the people who come to this podcast, they're going to all be grateful for the learning that we did through the scriptures and just seeing that, you know, the presentation of just the story, you know, belies just complexity and human shaping and all the, you know, this what we know and what we don't know. I love all that. But I think a lot of our listeners are the ones who are looking here and saying, how do I be both and so writers that help is great. Christine, anything as you go?
No, I second the recommendation for Anne Lamott. She's also wicked funny, which cool. is always good
very,
in religious
she's
writers.
Very funny.
And I'll put up some music and stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what does it. Truth is big and words are small, but music gets closer.
Yeah, you know, and there is something about, you know, ritual too, that it is, there's a different vibrational feel, you know, that kind of comes on. And so music is certainly one of those ways that just sort of shake loose, you know, the ability to have your brain do its little rational analytical stuff. And so they're like that, plus just that, oh, it opens you up right from the center instead of the top down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. Jared, anything else?
Oh, just, I'm glad to be part of the conversation. I think people have heard me enough, but I just want to reiterate as a strong closing note that one of the few things I can say without nuance is I do genuinely believe in spirituality. Like, you know that about me, Dan.
Yeah.
You know, like, I am a spiritual person. I really believe in revelation. I really believe in spirituality. I believe that we are connected with each other and with our environment in a way that we can that greater than we can currently understand. And so I think that we neglect these things at our peril. And that gets back to, you know,
not peril as in like sin that you can't be forgiven of,
right.
But it just
exactly
the lack of enrichment or something.
Yes, we are missing out in very important aspects of the human experience. And at the same time, I think that we all have a different spiritual language. And so if someone doesn't feel that same resonance of spirituality that someone else does, I don't think they're deficient. You know, I just think that we all have differing languages and ways of engaging with these transcendent elements of human experience. But I absolutely believe in them. And I think that we need new myths and we need new rituals and, or, you know, new and old. And I predict, maybe I'm just being hopeful, but I predict in the next generation or two, with the shift from standard authoritarian, exclusivistic, institutional religion, that there will be an expansion to something different. And it's going to be, I think we're going to have ritual and myth and this magic, for the lack of a better word. And that's what I hope for. And I want to do my part in making it happen.
That's great. Thank you for that, Jared. And thank you, all of you, for being here. I mean, what are we? We're going to be probably 5 hours worth of recording here or coming on. I think we did 3+ for Christmas. We've done even more here. Thank you for your stamina. Just listeners, we did this in a couple of shots. But what amazing friends, what amazing hearts, spirits, minds. I couldn't think of more generosity at Easter time than what you've each given here. And it's an honor to know you guys and to be in communion and relationship with you.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Listeners, please come to the website, contribute your own best stuff, your own thoughts on this. Go ahead and bring your skepticism if you need to. If you want somebody to share more, I'm sure everyone will do it. We'll certainly link to various things that we've talked about here. Mormon Matters is a gift of love, but it also is getting increasingly huge piece of my life through not only the production of these things, but through the conversations that I'm trying to have and the people that write with me. And so anybody who can support the podcast financially, that's really helpful. It is taking, there's other possibilities that I could do to make a little bit more money for my family than I'm taking here. So I'm not trying to, there's no threat here that we're going to go away or anything like that. But if there's something in your heart that says, I ought to donate to Dan and the podcast, I'm going to vote for that for this month. So thank you very much for anybody who does that. Wish you guys all a good night, and thank you again.
Good night.
Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.